Okay, it sounds like everyone has signed back on. With that, welcome to the board meeting for July 13th. This is a special meeting of the board, as we do not normally meet during the summer, but with all of the changes that have been taking place during this past school year with COVID-19, we are having a special board meeting in order to discuss our school year calendar revisions as well as our September 2020 startup. I'll remind trustees to please mute yourself when you are not speaking. I will go through a roll call for each question and topic. If you do not wish to comment on an item or ask a question, please state
joined.
Please state that you're not you do not have a comment, simply as otherwise we will assume that you are struggling with the mute button. With that, we will begin the meeting.
Joined.
And we'll start first with roll call.
Joined.
Do we have Trustee Archer on the phone?
Here.
Trustee Bingham.
Thank you.
Trustee Buck.
I'm here.
Trustee Danko.
Present.
Trustee D.
Here.
Trustee Galindo.
Present.
Trustee Johnstone, that is myself, I am present. Trustee Miller.
Present, thank you.
Trustee Mulholland. Trustee Ray Mulholland, are you on the phone? Trustee Pagan Miller.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Trustee Tutt. Student Trustee Meddy.
Joined.
Student Trustee Prozic. Is there anyone that I've missed? Okay. So with that, we'll move right along into the Hamilton-Wentworth District School Board land acknowledgement. The Hamilton-Wentworth District School Board acknowledges our presence on the ancestral Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee Confederacy land as determined by the Dish with One Spoon Treaty. The Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt represents the treaty relationship between the Haudenosaunee Confederacy and the Anishinaabe with respect to sharing the land and resources thereon. The intent of this agreement is for all nations sharing this territory to do so responsibly, respectfully, and sustainably in perpetuity. We respect the long-standing relationships of the local Indigenous peoples, the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, and the Six Nations of the Grand River. With that, we do not have the recording for O Canada this evening, so folks are welcome to take a moment to pay tribute to our national anthem silently. And with that, we will begin to move forward straight on to staff report. I'm just wondering, Trustee Officer Miller, should I not be asking for any declarations of conflict of interest at this point?
Not when it comes to a special board. If that's the case, they should have, because the agenda was already posted and provided to them, they should have already sent you notification.
Okay. Just to be on the safe side, I'll just ask, is there any notices of conflict of interest? Hearing none, we will proceed. Item 3, revised school year calendar 2020-2021, and I'll turn to Director Figueredo.
So thank you, through the chair. As trustees see in their package, page 3-1 is a revised school year calendars for trustees to approve this evening. as a result of COVID-19 and the school closure, although our board did approve a submission for a regular school year calendar to be submitted, the ministry did indicate that they were not going to approve the one submitted and would provide further clarification. And staff did receive information on June 30th around some advice from the ministry for a board to submit a revised timeline based on the new reality of September startup. On that note, I'll pass it over to Superintendent Jeff Gillies, who's led this work, and he'll walk the trustees through the report.
Thank you and good evening. Through the chair, I'm pleased to bring forward the revised 2020-21 school year calendars for final approval prior to submission to the Ministry of Education by July 24th. As Director Figueredo has indicated, trustees will recall that the 2020-21 school year calendars were approved by the Board of Trustees on April 20th for submission to the Ministry by May 1st. And prior to that submission being made, the Ministry of Education paused all calendar submissions throughout the province due to uncertainty around the reopening of schools for September. On June 30th, the Minister of Education issued a memo to boards providing new guidance and timelines for calendar submissions. In order to maximize instruction time for students and support staff training prior to reopening in the fall, the Ministry is advising boards to start the school year by September 1st, 2020, and to schedule 3 PA days prior to the start of student instruction. Trustees will see that the revised school year calendar, and I'll direct trustees to view the calendars that are within the appendix of the report, that those calendars reflect the advice from the ministry. As well, they continue to comply with Regulation 304 for a regular school year calendar. Through the recommendation of Executive Council, the original June 30th PA day that was in the original approved calendar has now been moved to September 1st. So on the calendars in the appendix, trustees will see June 30th circled as well as September 1st. So moving the PA day quite simply from June 30th to September 1st. A school reopening will likely require new structures and protocols. This adjustment will provide much needed time for staff training prior to the commencement of school for students. This amended school year calendar maintains the same number of instructional days for students. Elementary students and families will see no change to the originally approved school year calendar, as the first and last day of school remains unchanged. Secondary students will see little change except for a one-day shift in the last day of school for semester one, exam days, and the first day of semester two, all being shifted forward by one day to ensure a balance between semesters. Other than September 1st and the February PA day for secondary schools, all other PA days remain unchanged. The School Year Calendar Advisory Committee met virtually on July 8th to review the updated calendars. Consultation with the Coterminous Board is ongoing. And based on information received recently, I'd like to update the chart at the bottom of the second page of the report that's entitled Professional Activity Days. Firstly, I'm pleased to share that this update has resulted in an increase in the number of PA days that are aligned for both boards. In fact, all 7 elementary PA days and 5 secondary PA days are now aligned with the Coterminous Board. The following secondary PA days are aligned: September 1st, 2nd, 3rd, as well as November 7th and March 5th. that's an update from the chart that's currently on the trustee report, and that chart will be updated and placed publicly in the website tomorrow. In summary, the revised calendars comply with ministry advice by starting the school year on September 1st and providing 3 PA days prior to the first day of school for students. They provide upfront staff training prior to the start of the school year, as well as maintaining existing structures of the originally approved calendars with minimal disruption to students and families. And finally, they provide enhanced alignment with the coterminous board. If approved, the school year calendars will be submitted to the ministry for final approval by July 24th, 2020. Thank you, and that's my report.
Thank you. So with that, I'm going to turn straight over to the speakers list, Kathy Archer.
No questions at this time, thank you.
Christine?
No questions right now, thanks.
That should have been Trustee Bingham. Trustee Buck?
I do have a question. Thank you to Peter Sovereign and his group for making these changes. I don't actually have a question regarding the date changes. I did just want to acknowledge that the Faith Advisory Committee had a chance to look at the school year calendar, and it was brought to the attention of the committee, and we didn't and I apologize, the committee didn't have the timeline to be able to meet prior to tonight's meeting, but one of the members had brought up a point about Christian holidays being stated as Christian and Orthodox as Orthodox, or I think it was Western Christian versus Orthodox for their respective holidays. So the reason I bring this up is, and I would look to my colleagues around the table to get clarity about their sense of urgency and their knowledge of Hamilton and religious groups that they serve. And if this is worth us looking a little deeper, should we be designating Western Christian holidays as Protestant Christian and Orthodox Christian for their respective holidays? There is some overlap, but quite a good deal of holidays are actually different. And in our board, we don't have too many we probably don't have too many Catholic students with us having so many Catholic schools. I imagine they would, for the most part, be attending our.
There's two separate calendars. So I'm wondering, do you mind? And I'm so sorry for jumping in, but do you mind if I get clarification on the different calendars from the director? Do you mind if I do that?
Yes, of course. No, that makes sense.
Director Figueredo?
Well, thank you. It's for the chair. Thank you for clarifying that. So, Trustee Becky Buck, I think the calendar you're referring to is a religious holiday calendar that we do as a board that we make public and where we do work through the Faith Community Advisory Committee and our committee partners. That's different than the school year calendar that we're submitting. School year calendar to the ministry does not provide that level of detail. So that would be for, I think, a different discussion, but I know what you're referring to, but it's not part of this calendar.
Okay. All right. Well, I will save that then for next time. Thank you. No further questions.
Thanks, Trustee Buckett, and sorry about that. But thank you so much for those really important questions. I wonder, Trustee Danko.
Thank you to the chair. Just a quick question. Thank you for the work that staff has had to do to make the adjustments and dealing with your union groups, doing consultation. Question is about the start and stop. So typically we have to start on or after September 1st and before June 30th, but the ministry had stated that we could start the school year before September 1st this year. I just wanted to know, are we at the absolute minimum number of school or instructional days for this school year, and had we considered starting the school year earlier?
Director?
So thank you. Don, I'll ask Jeff to respond. The first part, you're right. So this is not a modified school year calendar, so we're still within September 1st as the date. And there was discussions around starting earlier, having students enter earlier as well. We decided that September 1st, 2nd, 3rd, that like other sectors who are opening up after COVID-19, the importance of us welcoming back staff first and reviewing what the protocols that will need to be in place. Once we learn what model we'll be in, will we be in full service model with enhanced health protocols, or will we be in an adaptive model? So we thought it was very important that we have 90 days with our staff before we actually welcome students in. That's why we decided not to bring the students in earlier, but to bring them in after Labor Day. But to the second part of your question around the number of days and what the committee discussed, I'll pass to Superintendent Gillies.
Thank you. And through the chair, as is usual for each year, the regular school year calendar typically includes 194 school days, and that's connected to payroll. As an example, the school year is geared around 194 days, and there are also collective agreement requirements around that. So of the 196 school days within the regular school year calendar from September 1st to June 30th, HWDSB will be utilizing 194 of those days to ensure compliance with collective agreements and our payroll agreements.
Thank you. And just to follow up, so our number of instructional days, is that also meeting the minimum standard of 187, or are we above that?
Yes, through the chair, the instructional days remain the same at 187. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you. Moving along, Trustee D.
No questions. Thank you.
Trustee Galindo.
Hi, no questions, but I do need to acknowledge the hard work that went in behind the scenes. It's hard enough to come up with the school year calendar every year, let alone make some last-minute changes here. So appreciate that work. That's all.
Thank you. Trustee Miller.
No questions, but I echo Trustee Galindo's gratitude, because this is a lot of work to do in a very difficult time. So thank you. I appreciate staff working so hard on this.
Trustee Paikin-Miller.
Okay, so thanks for your hard work on the school year calendar, but did we consult the employee groups? And what was their feedback? Yeah.
Director Figueredo?
Yes, we did. I'll pass it over to Superintendent Gilby to give that update and how we consulted our union groups.
Thank you. Through the chair, on July 8th, the School Year Calendar Advisory Committee met virtually, and that committee is comprised of our union group leaders as well as representatives from our parent groups, including Home and School and Parent Involvement Committee. So feedback from that committee, it's varied from each group, but I'll do my best to summarize what was heard there. Overall, there was understanding in terms of the need for upfront learning and preparation for staff. Concern, obviously, around the late timing in terms of when this information had been provided for the ministry and the quick turnaround required by boards. Noted that this would require some shifts in some plans that have already been put in place. As an example, September 1st, some of our secondary schools may have organized grade 9 orientation, so there would be a conflict there that would require a shift in time there. However, that certainly is doable. There was concern at the end of the year in terms of for secondary completion and submission of marks, and a takeaway from that is for some work to be done to plan in advance of that, looking in cooperation with OSSTF, our Teachers Federation, and HR to plan for that to ensure that that's feasible. And then finally, it's been common practice for the last day of the school year to be a PA day, and that has assisted with educators that are moving to another school, that often helped with that transition. And so there is a recognition that that this creates a different format and structure for those changes to take place and those transitions, and that certainly was acknowledged at the table. However, there's also recognition, and trustees will understand that we are in unique times, and next year and the start and reopening of school will be unique, and having that opportunity to have the PA day up front to support staff training and preparation for reopening, that really is a necessity. And so we recognize that this requires some changes in many things, including the structure and timing of our PA days. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Paikin-Miller, any further questions?
No, I think that covers it. And I want to thank him for all of you, for all the effort you've put in and that you've consulted teachers and unions. That's the important thing. Thank you.
Trustee Tutte, are you on the line? No. Do we have Trustee Mulholland? Do we have student trustee Meddy or Prozic? Hearing none, I just also want to echo the comments of thanks to our staff and to all of our employee groups for all of your work during this time and throughout all of COVID, but certainly in through the summer. And in order to ensure that we have a safe reopening and a successful reopening for September. So it is, all of the hard work is very much appreciated. As things continue to change rapidly at the provincial level, and so that means that we're often having to meet at the last minute in order to arrive at some of these decisions, very important decisions. So thank you. So to that, this is a monitoring report, so it would be a motion to receive. It's an action report, so it's a motion to approve. With that, I will have, I'll go backwards, I guess, through roll call. So the motion will go forward by Trustee Paikin-Miller, seconded by Trustee Miller. Anyone voting against? Hearing none, the motion does pass. Moving on now to item number 4, September 2020 startup report, and I'll turn now to Director Figueredo to bring forward the report.
So thank you through the chair. As you can see in your package, we have a monitoring report. Before I pass it over to Associate Director Peter Sovin, who put the report together on behalf of Exec Council, I thought it was very critical to bring this report to trustees today, and a second one will be coming on July 27th. In response to the reopening
during COVID or post-COVID, depending where we are in the fall. The board, each board has been asked to be prepared with three plans, three scenarios. One being full return to service model with enhanced safety protocols. Two, a hybrid adaptive model based on the ministry guidelines. And C, depending on the COVID numbers, full remote distance learning. So what you will see this evening presented by Associate Director Peter Sullivan is a summary of the work to date that began in May, led by ad hoc committees, with some voices provided through our school leaders, our principals, also consultation with our union leaders, but also information that we've gathered through parents through a second thought exchange that showed over 10,000 respondents. Again, this is sort of our, where we are today, and as Chair, you have mentioned that information changes not only weekly but daily from the province, but really pleased with the efforts that have been put in by staff right now, and especially the continued effort to prepare for all three models. So at this point, I'll pass it over to Associate Director Peter Sovereign, who will go through the report page by page, and we'll answer any questions at the end.
Great. Thank you, Manny, and good evening, trustees, and through the chair. As the director has indicated, I'll walk through the report. I'll reference both page numbers and sections to help facilitate as we go through it. I'll just begin by on 4-1. Once again, in terms of setting the context, trustees will recall that in previous information sessions, we've provided updates around the work that had begun, work that we have called foundational work in leading up to the reopening plan in anticipation of what we would receive from the ministry in terms of direction or guidance. A variety of working committees not only began in May, but have now really continued in earnest in all of their work. While the director indicated that, you know, the report's been prepared by myself, it is an absolute full team effort from Executive Council. Each member of Executive Council is leading substantial portions of each one of these elements of the reopening. I will turn trustees' attention to the section entitled Ministry of Education Approach to Reopening Schools. Within this section, I'll walk you through each one of the paragraphs. We've summarized here the guidelines that have been provided by the ministry, available on the website and referenced in the paragraph above. This was released on June the 19th, and I'm pleased to say that much of the foundational work that we had begun was certainly in line with the guidelines that were being provided, a lot of that is credit to the fact that our teams, again, through members of Executive Council, have been in constant communication both with the ministry and especially with public health throughout the closure. In that first paragraph, and as was summarized by the director, the three scenarios that the ministry has asked that we prepare and provide to them to review in the latter part of July are a scenario where all students are returning to school with regular routines and enhanced public health protocols. And that's scenario A. We'll keep referring to them as A, B, and C throughout the remainder of this report. Scenario B is the one that I believe most have engaged in conversations and a lot of planning in recent weeks. That's because it is a scenario that is adaptive. It's one that is a modified school day routine. It would require not only the enhanced public health protocols, but it would also require small class sizes each day, It would require the grouping of students, which has been termed cohorting, and we'll keep referring to that term as well throughout the reports. And then scenario C, which by and large has been the scenario that we've been engaged in during the school closure. However, there is an expectation as put forward from the ministry that we take the learnings from the closure and should it be required, a scenario C where once again learning would continue completely remotely, that we would be prepared for that. In the next paragraph, under that same heading, trustees will note that the minister also issued within these guidelines a notation to parents, guardians, caregivers, that attendance during a period of these public health circumstances would be voluntary for students. However, if families chose not to have their child attend in person at school during these times, that remote learning would be made available to them. In addition, the ministry has indicated that where possible, the remote learning would continue within the structure of assigned classes and teachers. The next paragraph at the bottom of page 4-1 is the guideline provided by the ministry around students with high levels of special education needs, that consideration be given to have them attend in person on a daily basis. That would be if we were in scenario B, where there would be the otherwise limitations in terms of attending every day. So to summarize 4-1, the three scenarios, a full return with enhanced public health protocols, a modified or adapted return where students would be placed into cohorts and attend school for the most part not on regular days, and a third scenario, which would be full remote learning. I'll ask trustees to turn to page 4-2. With the ministry guidelines on transportation, they have outlined a number of steps that our transportation consortium is looking at, and as well we're considering in terms of the models for both elementary and for secondary. I will highlight for trustees that the ministry has indicated that their guidance for transportation would be that where possible to ease pressure on transportation demands, to really focus in on the transportation for those students that would otherwise not be able to attend school, while as well maintaining physical distancing when students are either on the bus or gathering for the bus. And there are specific federal guidelines as well that the ministry has indicated that boards and transportation consortiums refer to. The next paragraph is a combination of other guidelines that have been provided by the ministry that we are working towards, including communication with parents, our program division, our specialized services division, working very closely and looking at academic success, assessment evaluation practices. Our standardization of our digital tools is something that we have been working on for a while now, and again, it's a recommendation from the ministry that childcare and before and after school, that we work with the providers very closely Similar to the school year calendar, of course, the ministry has stated quite explicitly to work closely with all of our employee groups as we develop and implement the plans. But above all, to prioritize the health and safety of students, staff, and families throughout each of these scenarios as we look to the reopening. In the next paragraph that begins with health and safety measures, we'll get into these more specifically when we talk about the plans that we've already developed. But in terms of the ministry guidelines, they're focused on both physical health protocols, which have multiple components, as well as mental health and well-being supports for students, being an integral part of the reopening, regardless of the scenario which we find ourselves in. And lastly, in that paragraph, in that section, it is worth noting that the Ministry of Education does continue to have discussions at the provincial level with the various employee groups, as a number of the models particularly for Scenario B, may have potential collective agreement issues that would need to be resolved at a provincial level. And as well as we've learned through our many, many conversations with Hamilton Public Health, as they've been speaking with other public health authorities across the province, they are as well looking for both the ministry and the provincial government to provide as much guidance as possible so that the health units themselves and the advice that they are providing to us as school boards don't differ. So as has been already noted this evening, things do change rather rapidly. That note there is really an indication that not only are we continuing to have very local discussions, but we're also looking to the province in terms of their guidance and the discussions they're having. So I'm going to suggest I'm going to pause there and see if there are any clarifying questions around just what the ministry has set forward in terms of their expectations, and then we'll walk trustees through a few of the other sections in terms of some of our planning. Take another break and look for questions of clarification, and then continue that way. So, Madam Chair, I'll turn it back to you to see if there are any questions of clarification just for this section.
Thank you so much. And just before I go on to roll call, I do want to start by expressing deep and sincere gratitude on behalf of the Board of Trustees to our entire Executive Council, to all of the staff who have been working hard behind the scenes, and to all of our employee groups and all of our educators and staff across the entire system who have been working with us with regards to plans for September. I think, and also to all of our parent groups and students who have participated in thought exchange and provided our board with such valuable input. I think it's important to note how quickly things have been changing. And it would have been, I went through the timeline recently back in towards the end of May is when school boards were first told that we should start to think about what September reopening might look like. At that point, our board was being told, as all boards were, that the ministry would be communicating details in June. And it was June 20th that we were first told to start considering adaptive models. And that's where our staff team leaped into action in order to solicit feedback from parents, students, and staff through the thought exchange. And many parents especially have reached out to us to provide feedback to local trustees, to their principals, to the director, or directly to the director. And this has been really critical. I think that today, for example, the premier has noted that that we'll be entering into stage three shortly, and we are to learn in the coming weeks what that impact will be on reopening plans. So it might mean that we see a full day return. But it gives you a summary of the changing, ever-changing environment that our staff have been working through. And in each step, it has meant that we have had to work directly, reach out to our employee groups, reach out to parents, reach out to public health, Hamilton, locally, as well as work with our coterminous school board to develop really detailed plans for quite literally every possible scenario. It's been a tremendous amount of work. For that, we thank you. And we also hope that that the province will start to solidify its plans more so that our school board, our staff, and certainly our parents, so that we can have more, I think, a more clear understanding of what to expect for September. It just helps with planning. So with that, I will turn to roll call. Trustee Archer, comments, questions up until this point of the school reopening plan?
Nothing at this time. Like you said, it changes daily and weekly, so we just hold on.
Thank you. Trustee Bingham.
The heels of what Trustee Archer just said, yes, it changes rapidly, but I'm kind of stuck on the school buses. We don't know how many students. We don't know how we can keep them social distancing. We don't know how we're going to keep people safe on buses, and on top of that, we still have a shortage at this point. So I'm quite concerned about the busing situation as well. So I don't know if that's a question or just a comment, but that's definitely, is there anything, the question, is there anything that is a little more concrete about the busing or the transportation at this point, or are we just waiting until we have something else in the next little while? I'm kind of frustrated on that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Director Figueredo, can you just point out, we're up till the point that we're at with the report in terms of the page, and then if you want to keep comment on that or state whether that will be coming later in the report, Director Figueredo?
Yes, so thank you, Alex. I'll just ask you to respond to that in terms of what we can say around the ministry guidelines right now around transportation. A little more detail will come a little later on how we're trying to operationalize it, and based on what parents have told us so far. But I'll ask Peter to just remind us the page we're on based on ministry guidelines so far, ministry expectations, and what we know about transportation so far.
Yeah.
I think we're on page 42. But, yeah, continue.
Thank you, and through the chair. Yes, so on page 4-2 at the very top, that paragraph really refers to what the ministry has indicated they expect school boards to work on for transportation. So just to reiterate again that they've encouraged and would encourage boards to have active transportation, and as you'll see there, they have also indicated that they would encourage only those requiring school bus transportation in order to be able to attend school to begin with that and utilizing the transportation. Again, all with a view to easing the pressure as they, both the province knows and we know locally of the demands, the pressure on our transportation services in a regular school year. Let alone in our reopening scenarios. but also in terms of cleaning, physical distancing, hand sanitizing, and a long list of other protocols. Our transportation services have been working on this as well as a separate committee to put all of these measures in place. And the reference there to Transport Canada's federal guidance for school bus operations has a very lengthy list of additional public health protocols that should be addressed for school bus.
Trustee Bingham, further follow-up?
No, that's great. I'm glad that there's a separate group that is sitting down to address a million things before we even get to anywhere near the opening of school in September. Thank you.
Trustee Buck.
With transportation, my question is around how do we identify those families that require transportation for their child in order to attend school? I feel like this particular language leaves room for a lot of car drop-offs, so a lot of congestion around our elementary schools in particular that already had a lot of complications with too many motor vehicles dropping off students as near to the door as possible. So can we maybe address that? How are we determining who requires transportation through us in order to have their student attend?
Director Figueredo?
Thank you. I think before I pass to Peter Silver, just a reminder to trustees, we of course use our existing policy, and if we are an adaptive model, that typically means that half of the students would be present, and that any model we look at in adaptive, there's going to be ripple effects, as Peter is always reminding me. Nothing will be a perfect solution. There are always ripple effects when one decision is made. But I'll ask Peter to answer the question in terms of how will we determine from the families that are eligible for transportation based on our policy, how will we know if they will require it to attend school?
Thanks, Director. And through the chair, and to your question, Trustee Buck, again, at that top paragraph on 4-2 is really just looking at what has the ministry told school boards in terms of providing that guidance for transportation so that we are using that in order to do our planning. Right now, all of our planning would include all students that are eligible for transportation. So we begin with that. We would look at what does that look like in terms of providing the adequate physical distancing, all of the other enhanced public health protocols. What will it look like at the when we do know how many families are choosing themselves to have their child utilize the bus transportation provided by the board? So a lot of different variables, and I wouldn't want to leave you with the impression that just based on these guidelines, we have then started to determine who needs transportation and who doesn't. As the director has indicated, we have our policy around eligibility. That's our starting point. And then we layer in all of the additional public health protocols. We determine which students will be in which cohorts, and we'll get into that a little bit later. We're going to endeavor to keep families together. When we do the cohorting, regardless of whether or not they're even in the same school. So all of those will factor in, and as the director has indicated, do have those ripple effects. I just wanted to highlight for trustees, these are the guidelines that the ministry has asked us to consider. And to your question around congestion around schools, the very first point that I think the ministry has highlighted is that where possible, they would encourage active transportation, which would be non-use of bus and non-use of vehicles, where possible.
Trustee Buck, follow-up? I think you might be on mute.
I was. I'm so sorry. My apologies. Thank you for that information regarding the busing, the transportation. I'm fascinated. So I think it's going to be a very critical piece. My other question is around determining cohorts of students. Would you be able to provide any kind of information at this point? And I realize it might be early on, and if nothing has been finalized, if we were to go into this scenario, just say the word, and I can be patient. But I was wondering, how are we determining cohorts, which students will be with which students, so to speak? Is it a similar process to end of year determining which students will be with which teacher, something along those lines?
Associate Director?
Thank you, and through the chair. We will get into that in the later part of the report.
All right, I look forward to hearing it. No, I can be patient.
Wonderful. Trustee Trustee Dango.
Thank you, and through the chair, I'll just echo the chair's thanks to staff. This is a highly complex problem that you've been given to solve. It's got many stakeholders, so many considerations, and you don't necessarily have all of the information that you need to figure out what an absolute solution would be, including, is there access to extra funding from the ministry? Do we have the ability to increase staffing? What are those collective agreement considerations that may be a concern, et cetera? And it makes me think of The Princess Bride, if you know the movie, where Wesley says, if only I had a wheelbarrow. And, of course, they did have one. He said, why didn't you just list that among our assets in the first place? So I appreciate where staff are and doing their absolute best with this. I have a number of questions, but I'll just stick to a couple that fit with this section. Just to follow up on Trustee Buck's questions about transportation, I guess my question was the opposite of looking at who requires the bus absolutely. I was wondering if we're looking at options for families to let us know early on that they will opt out of transportation.
Director Figueredo.
Well, thank you, through the chair. Associate Director could add more. But once we know what mode we're going to be in, once the ministry lets us know, if we are in the adaptive model, there will be not only an expectation for us to find out whether parents are opting in or out of transportation if they're eligible, we'll also need to know if they're opting to send their child to school or request full distance learning. We'll have to do, as the ministry said, some type of call-out registration to gain both of those pieces of information.
Thank you for clarifying that, and I appreciate that we have time to look for that information and reach out to our families. This leads me to your second question. We are expected to communicate with families in our community. Have we sort of developed a tentative communication plan for families during the month of August as we're leading into this and as new updates or information or changes may be happening or not? Are we going to communicate weekly? How might we be doing that? And is there a way to highlight that for families?
Director Figueredo?
Yeah, so through the chair, we're re-engaging our communication flow. So as after tonight's board meeting, there'll be a staff update sent out tomorrow, plus a public communication sent out from the chair to at least keep our community aware of where we're at this point in time as a result of the report.
Then after July 27th, we'll be coming back to the board, hopefully with more specificity as we have more information, and we'll be communicating to the public and to our staff again. So we're committed through July and August to keep that communication flow ongoing.
Kathy? Thank you. And I was wondering, given that the guidelines talk about the need for increased cleaning, possibly the need for increased supervision because we're talking about more time outside than inside, and for mental health supports, has the ministry shared with us if there is the potential for any funding to accompany whatever our planning is, or are we planning within our current existing budget?
Director Figueredo?
So through the chair, I know that chairs of boards, including directors at with teleconferences with the minister that are occurring as of most recently today, and another one that's occurring with directors and the deputy minister this week. We are advocating, depending on the adaptive model, that boards might require additional funds. The minister have indicated that based on our GSNs to work through that, but that they're open to further conversations depending of the COVID reality, if it changes, to support boards. For example, if the PPE requirements shift, will boards be provided potential money? And another question around transportation is being asked, depending on the mode we're in. So we're currently asked to work with our existing GSN, but to know that it's not static, that we will continue to have conversations with the ministry depending on our model if we require additional support. And they've also been saying that they're doing some central provincial procurement of items on behalf of boards to find some cost savings like PPE. So I know chairs have been advocating through the minister conversations, and so have directors through code that we continue to have a cycle of conversation depending if needs evolve.
And
thank
you.
Sorry, Trustee Danko, just before you continue, because this was, I was on the chair's phone call today and specifically asked the question around will there be additional funding for PPE and for transportation. And just to highlight, TDSB is currently planning to go in the red for $22 million in order to cover additional PPE costs for 4 months, for the first 4 months. And the minister's response today was that they are looking to find out what the costs are from school boards, what we anticipate increased or additional costs for PPE may be, and that they will take that into consideration and potentially be supplying us with more funding. But it wasn't, there was not a firm commitment. It was a potential as of this afternoon.